Welcome to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine's Fiction Podcast. I'm Janet Hutchings, EQMM's editor. This month we have another treat for fans of the classical whodunit, one of the series of Edward D. Hoke radio plays that were produced by radio man Dave Amaral in the 1970s and that EQMM has been presenting over the past couple of years. This time the setting is a July 4th celebration where Dr. Sam Hawthorne, one of the most beloved of Edward D. Hoke's characters, must solve an impossible crime and bring a sense of normalcy back to the small New England town of Northmont.
A figure in a black flowing cloak pushed past the bandsman on the steps and rushed at the mayor. The figure wore a hood over his head and a rope noose dangled from his neck. In his right hand was an upraised carving knife. Mayor Wiggins turned towards him, more puzzled than alarmed. Then the knife plunged deep into Wiggins' chest. The hooded figure whirled around, leaving the knife buried in his victim's chest. I saw Roy Pinkerton and the others lunge forward to grab the assassin. But in that instant, there was a sudden blinding flash and a puff of thick smoke. For maybe 10 seconds, we could see nothing. Then, as the smoke cleared, I saw Roy Pinkerton and the other musicians standing over the body. The killer had vanished.
It's time once again for Sam Hawthorne, retired New England doctor, to recall another story from his book of memories, another miracle problem. Tonight, the problem of the haunted bandstand.
Well, hello there. It's nice to have you back again. Yes, yes. Well, now, I promised to tell you about the haunted bandstand, didn't I? You were comfortable in that chair? Your glass filled? These aren't stories to listen to without a small libation, you know. No, sir. Ah, there we go. Now, you remember the problem of the lobster shack we talked about last time? Well, this was that same summer, 1924 it was. It was a healthy summer, as summers go, and there wasn't too much call for my services. I remember how folks round Northmont were so looking forward to the big doings set for the 4th of July. You see, that's when it happened, with the bandstand and all, on the 4th of July. The old bandstand was a tall wooden structure, well weathered and in need of repainting. There were 8 sides, all open, and a roof that tapered to a point with a weather vane atop it. The floor was maybe 4 feet off the ground, and steps leading up to it. There were railings along the steps and railings enclosing all the other sides. The space beneath the bandstand was completely enclosed, guarding against wandering children. It was near the old bandstand in the park that I happened to meet Doc Henry Church, the local druggist, about a week before the big celebration. Doc Church was always friendly to me, probably because I sent him most of his business. He was a smiling man of medium build, around 40.
Hello, Dr. Sam.
Evening, Henry.
Big doings here next week. You come to the band concert and the fireworks?
Oh, I wouldn't miss it, Henry. The 4th of July is one of the high spots here in Northmont.
Thought a fellow like you would have more important things to do than listening to me play the flute in the town band.
Well, it is a pretty important thing. All the girls will be here.
I guess they will at that. Say, Sheriff Lenz ever tell you about the ghost?
What ghost?
Oh, happened back around 1880, right after the bandstand was built.
What happened?
A couple of gypsies came into town, a man and his wife. One night, he broke into the hardware store, and they caught him. They said he had a knife, 1 foot long, and he killed the sheriff. I guess the townsfolk weren't taking any chances. They strung him up from the top of the bandstand.
Lynched him? Lynchings don't happen here in New England.
They were rare, but they happened. Indians in colonial days and witches, too, in Salem. Well, anyway, his gypsy wife put a curse on the bandstand. They drove her out of town, but they said he still comes back, wearing a hood and the rope around his neck.
Sounds like an old wives' tale to me.
Well, I'll admit he hasn't been seen in recent years.
People today are too smart for that nonsense.
I suppose you're right.
Mayor Wiggins returned from Washington yet?
Just this morning. Came in to get his prescription refilled. He says Washington is hot and full of flies. Quite a place for our nation's capital, huh?
Well, I guess it's not too pleasant in the summer. Did Wiggins have any luck in getting a post office for Northmont?
Yeah, Postmaster General was out of town, probably out fishing. Mayor Wiggins never even saw him. Had to meet with his assistant. Wiggins is hopeful, though, but then he's always hopeful.
I got to be getting back to my patients, Henry.
Right, lots of prescription there, Dr. Sam.
During the week of the 4th, my office was mildly busy, mostly with the usual summer complaints from farm injuries and poison ivy. The day before the 4th was a very quiet day, but I had an unexpected visitor.
Dr. Sam!
Tom Younglove, what seems to be the trouble?
Dr. Sam, I need your help.
Better catch your breath first.
It's not me, it's Mayor Wiggins. He won't see me.
Well, what can I do about that?
Says he's ill. Is he?
I couldn't rightly answer that without examining him. I've been prescribing a medication for his heart, but I haven't heard of any other complaint. He was just back from Washington the end of last week. Maybe he picked up something down there.
It's nothing he picked up as was keeping him from seeing me. It's my land deals.
What are these land deals?
Can't you just call him and see if he's really sick?
If he's sick, I'll be hearing from him. Why don't you wait until tomorrow?
Tomorrow's the holiday.
Well, he'll be at the band concert tomorrow night. Nothing could keep him away from his first 4th of July celebration as mayor.
You're right. I'll see him there. Sorry for busting in on you, Doc.
It was something of a ritual on quiet days for me to walk down to Doc Church's drugstore for a chocolate soda. His place was just down the street. A long, narrow store with a checkered tile floor and a soda fountain with 6 wire stools down the right side. Doc Church waved from the back as I entered.
Chocolate soda as usual?
Glass of lemonade today, Henry.
Things slow around the office, Dr. Sam.
Still pretty quiet. Tom Younglove was just in, blowing off steam about the mayor being sick and not seeing him.
Well, there goes a week's profits. Here, I'll pour you another lemonade. Say, what's Tom Younglove up to with all the land he's buying?
Wish I knew. Maybe I should be buying some, too. Friday evening was bright and balmy. It was nearly 9 o'clock before Roy Pinkerton and his brightly uniformed musicians made their way to the bandstand. Mayor Wiggins was scheduled to play an important part in the evening's program, and Roy was the man he'd defeated in the election, which I guess proves you could woo more votes with words than with music. Off in the distance, I could see the crew setting up the fireworks. Sheriff Lenz and a couple of his men were busy keeping kids away from the scene. The twilight had faded now, and the lights around the edge of town were coming on.
Dr. Sam.
Oh, hello, Tom.
I still haven't seen Mayor Wiggins.
Cheer up. He'll be here soon.
Say, ever hear the story about the bandstand? How they hanged a man from it?
I heard. Is it true?
Sure. And they say his ghost still comes back with a noose around its neck.
We turn to see Mayor Wiggins and his wife, Vera, threading their way through a sea of well-wishers. Always the politician. Wiggins was pausing to shake everyone's hand. Oh, he wasn't a bad sort, despite his looking like a Boston ward boss. His wife, Vera, was a beautiful woman, tall and graceful. When I saw I couldn't get through to him, I settled for reaching out to touch Vera's arm as she passed.
Hello, Dr. Sam.
Did you enjoy Washington?
Terrible place in the summer. I'm happy to be home.
The music is lovely, isn't it, Mrs. Wiggins?
Then the bandsmen started leaving for a break. Roy Pinkerton, always a good loser, came forward to introduce his rival.
Ladies and gentlemen, while the band takes a much-deserved rest and we get ready for the fireworks, it's my great pleasure to present the mayor of Northmont, the Honorable David Wiggins.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of Northmont. It's an honor and a privilege to join you on my first July 4th as mayor. Now, this is a very joyous...
Evening, Henry.
He's good for an hour. The kids will be asleep before the fireworks even start.
He was right, and I decided to do something about it. I pushed my way through to the edge of the crowd and walked across the open space to the launching racks for the fireworks. Now, I knew the person in charge, a young farmhand named Chris, and I gave him the word.
Oh, hello, Dr. Hawthorne.
The mayor says to start the show, Chris.
Now? He's still talking, ain't he?
Now, Chris.
Okay, here goes.
For progress just doesn't happen. Well, it looks like the big show is already starting. So I'll turn the program back to my good friend, Roy Pinkerton. How about a big hand for Roy and the band?
The band was drifting back to the bandstand, and most eyes were turned skyward at the starbursts of red and white and blue rockets, and that was when it happened. So suddenly that for a moment we couldn't believe our eyes. A figure in a black flowing cloak pushed past the bandsmen on the steps and rushed at the mayor. The figure wore a hood over his head and a rope noose dangled from his neck. In his right hand was an upraised carving knife. Mayor Wiggins turned towards him, more puzzled than alarmed. Then the knife plunged deep into Wiggins' chest. The hooded figure whirled around, leaving the knife buried in his victim's chest. I saw Roy Pinkerton and the others lunge forward to grab the assassin. But in that instant, there was a sudden blinding flash and a puff of thick smoke. And for maybe 10 seconds, we could see nothing. Then, as the smoke cleared, I saw Roy Pinkerton and the other musicians standing over the body. The killer had vanished. I rushed forward, pushing past the musicians who still blocked the steps of the bandstand. Above us, the fireworks were still bursting against the night sky. I turned over Mayor Wiggins' body and felt for a pulse, but I knew there wouldn't be one. The knife had gone straight to the heart.
He's vanished.
Dr. Sam, I grabbed the rope around his neck, but he just disappeared.
The man who stabbed him has disappeared.
Sheriff, get this crowd out of here. The celebration is over.
Sam, what's happened?
Mayor Wiggins has been murdered, and his killer vanished right before our eyes. Vanished in a puff of smoke.
Tarnation, Sam. Killers don't just disappear in puffs of smoke, and lynching victims don't come back to life after 40 years.
Of course not. And I don't believe this business of a haunted bandstand any more than you do.
Then what happened to the killer?
We'll know better in the morning, after we've examined the bandstand.
I saw a magician in Boston once. He vanished from the stage in a puff of smoke.
Trap door.
You think there's a trap door in the bandstand?
There's not enough light for a thorough examination now.
What kind of a bandstand would have a trap door in it?
Perhaps one that was once used as a gallows.
What can you tell us, Roy?
I don't know. I just can't believe it.
Confound it! Henry, suppose you tell me what you saw.
Only this. This man with the hood and the black cloak. I was close enough to touch him.
Think carefully now, Henry. Is there any chance, any possibility at all, that the figure we all saw wasn't real? That it was projected by some sort of magic lantern?
Dr. Sam, he was as close as you or me. I grabbed at him, and just as he stabbed the mayor, I was hanging onto this noose around his neck, and when he disappeared, I still had it.
Besides, Sam, projected images can't stab people. You know that.
If the image was projected, someone standing close to the mayor could have wielded a real knife.
I wasn't that close to him. Roy was a lot closer than I was.
I was standing right next to the mayor when he was stabbed. It all happened so fast, I didn't know what to do.
I remember seeing the killer push past two bandsmen on the steps. Come to think of it, he was flesh and blood, all right.
Sam, could he have dived over the railing during the confusion?
Mm-mm. The stairs were blocked, and there were people all around the sides. The smoke lasted for maybe 10 seconds. He was a real person, and he couldn't have gone anywhere except up or down.
I could help you investigate it, maybe. I could take pictures of the bandstand for you and Sheriff Lenz.
Oh, I'd forgotten you were an amateur photographer.
I might be able to use you at that, Henry. Isn't that Tom Younglove? Come here, Younglove. Where were you when all the excitement started?
I was at Dixie's Diner. I was having coffee.
And some of Dixie's bootleg whiskey?
Why did you go to Dixie's? As I remember, all that was on your mind was seeing the mayor.
Say, what is all this? Why were you so anxious to see Mayor Wiggins?
This is terrible. His death could ruin me.
It sure ruined him.
I'm sorry if I seemed heartless, but I had important business with the mayor.
What sort of business?
I suppose I have to talk about it sooner or later. I've been buying up farmland.
I know that. What's it all about?
Well, I'm negotiating with one of the new automobile companies. They want to build a plant here.
A car factory in Northmont? It's a wonder somebody didn't kill you.
The day is coming when every family will own an automobile. A Purcell, like a Dr. Sam's or a Stutz or a Packard. Plants are springing up all over the country. It's a chance for Northmont to get its share of the coming prosperity.
They're all being made around Detroit.
Sure, but the Jordan's made in Cleveland. And this company, which I can't name, wants two plants. One here in the east and one in Denver for the west.
And that's why you wanted to speak to Mayor Wiggins?
Yeah. I need the town's approval to put that farmland to industrial use.
You might be right about the future of the car, but Northmont's not the place for a factory.
Dr. Sam, come quickly.
That sounds like Vera Wiggins. What is it?
Dr. Sam, the young Brady boy has gotten burned by a firecracker. On top of everything else that's happened.
Where is he?
Over by those trees. I've tried to bandage him.
I'd better have a look.
Over here, Dr. Sam. I'm glad I found you. Better check over my work.
You've done a good job of first aid treatment.
Thank you.
I thought you'd be home by now.
I couldn't face an empty house. I'm staying the night with friends. But I can't quite face them yet either.
I see. You'll be all right now, son. Have your mom call me in the morning. Vera, I'm sorry about your husband. I only knew him as an occasional patient, but I liked him. I know what you must be going through.
He always had a high regard for you, Dr. Sam.
What was his opinion of Tom Younglove?
He didn't take him too seriously.
Your husband claimed to be sick yesterday when Younglove tried to see him.
He was sick. His stomach was upset. I wanted him to call you,
but he wouldn't.
I see. How about Roy Pinkerton? Was there any bitterness after the election?
None that I know of.
We should both be getting some sleep. Thank you for helping with the boy's injury.
It was nothing.
In the morning, I went back to the park. It was deserted. Crepe paper still hung from the bandstand, but there was something forlorn about it now. I went up and studied the floor, where the hooded killer had stood just before he vanished. The planks of the floor were solid. I looked up at the cupola above my head. The beam showed no evidence of a rope or a wire.
Well, have you solved the case?
Oh, morning, Sheriff. Just checking the floor. There's no trap door.
I could have told you that.
Then what happened to him?
You believe in ghosts?
Oh, I know. A man was hanged from the roof some 40 years ago. I've heard the story.
I'd sure like some better answer before all them Boston reporters start trooping in here. A haunted bandstand. That's all North Mott needs.
Sheriff Lenz.
Morning, Mrs. Wiggins. What's the trouble?
Good morning, Vera.
Hello, Dr. Sam. I told you that I was staying with friends overnight. I just went home and discovered someone had broken in. The pane of glass in the side door is smashed.
Are they take anything?
Nothing seems to be missing, but I'm afraid it might have been the killer and that he was looking for me.
I'll go have a look-see. You coming, Dr. Sam?
Yes, there's nothing more to be found here.
It was clear that someone had entered the Wiggins home by the side door after breaking the glass and reaching through for the bolt. There was glass on the floor where the intruder had stepped in.
This is just the way I found it.
And you're sure that there's nothing missing?
Pretty certain, Sheriff. I'm just sick about it.
Sick? Could I see your bathroom?
Of course. Right this way.
The first thing I saw when I entered the bathroom were tiny slivers of glass on the linoleum floor near the claw-footed bathtub. Yes, sir. Those slivers of glass and a bit more looking told me who had killed Mayor Wiggins. Doc Church's drugstore was empty when the sheriff and I entered. Doc Church was standing on a stepladder, arranging bottles of liniment on a shelf.
You want to come down a minute, Doc? We gotta talk to you.
I got lots of work to do here.
You'd better talk to us, Henry.
Dr. Sam's got some ideas about the killing.
You think I did it, don't you?
I know you did it, Henry. More than that, I know when you killed him.
When? Well, the killing was last night, Sam. Everybody saw it.
Yeah, you're wrong, Sheriff. Mayor Wiggins died last night, but Henry killed him over a week ago when he gave him the wrong prescription for his heart trouble.
You know. But how could you?
The thing that's been bothering me ever since last night's stabbing is why the killer went to the trouble of imitating a ghost and committing the murder in front of hundreds of witnesses. It had to be dangerous, with so many chances of being captured. You realize that Wiggins was already dying from your mistake, and you tried to kill him in such a way that there'd be no question as to the cause of the death. I knew you'd refilled his prescription last week. You told me so. And when I was in your place Thursday, talking about Wiggins being sick and not seeing Tom Younglove, the news upset you so much that you spilled my glass of lemonade. You remember? You were already afraid you'd made a mistake, and my words confirmed it in your mind. You broke into Wiggins' house last night because you had to get that bottle of pills from the medicine cabinet in the bathroom.
It was a terrible mistake I made. He was talking about his Washington trip, and I wasn't paying enough attention to my work. I used the wrong powder to press into tablet form. When I saw him a few days later, he seemed kind of pale and out of sorts. I came back here and I found out I could have made the mistake. And then on Thursday when he told me he was sick, I knew he was dying. Even if I went to him and admitted the truth, it would be too late to save him. My life, my family's life would be ruined. Who'd ever trust a prescription to me again?
But how did you disappear from the bandstand?
He didn't disappear. We knew the musicians would be given a break while Wigan spoke. During the break, he went out of range of the lights and slipped a cloak of black crepe paper over his band uniform. He put on a cloth hood with eye holes over his head and a noose around his neck to complete the ghost illusion.
And how about the flash of light, the smoke?
Well, he'd covered the crepe paper with flash powder. He's an amateur photographer, remember. When he set off the powder, it not only blinded us, but burned up the paper cloak. He stuffed the hood under his band jacket and held the noose in his hand, explaining when the smoke cleared that he'd tried to grab the killer.
Come on, Henry. I'll have to take you in.
So, that's how it was back in 1924. I guess I'll never forget that 4th of July. Here, let me refill your glass. No? Oh, say, did I ever tell you the story about a train ride I once took? And about the impossible robbery that happened on the way? It was the doggondest locked room mystery you ever heard tell. Oh, but you have to leave now, eh? Guess I'll have to save that story until next time.
Dr. Sam Hawthorne, produced by Dave Amaral and based on the characters created by Edward D. Hope, appearing in Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Heard in tonight's cast were Jim Harmon as Sheriff Lenz, with Frank Knight, Sarah Hamner, Lloyd Nesbitt, Rose McGinnis, and Richard Scott as Dr. Sam Hawthorne. This is Robert Lasich, inviting you to join us next time.
The Problem of the Haunted Bandstand is copyrighted by the estate of Edward D. Hoke. This recording was adapted to make it suitable for podcast by Jackie Sherbo. You can subscribe to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine, where you'll find more stories like this one, by visiting our website at www.themysteryplace.com/EQMM.